It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Celebration tonight is a travesty. We're honoring murderers.
You know what? The thing about the fog is that it came between the titans of Halloween and the Thing.
He's crazy. There's no fog bank out there.
Hey, there's a fog bank out there.
Now what is the big deal? You've seen fog once, you've seen it for life.
Oh, there's something different about this fog, Dan. It glows.
I've heard of it, but I keep forgetting that it's a Carpenter movie. It's like, it's the middle child.
If someone knocks at your door, don't answer. How many people die because they answered a door?
I'll tell you, I saw Dick Baxter 3 days ago in Salinas. Now he's lying in there on the table looking like he's been underwater for a month.
This is what a ghost story should be.
But it is told by the fishermen that when the fog returns to Antonio Bay, the men at the bottom of the sea, out in the water by Spivey Point, will rise up.
On the 100th anniversary of this horrible act that these people perpetrated on us, we will rise from a watery grave and fuck you right up.
Albatross around the neck, no more like a millstone, a plumbing stone, by God. Damn them all.
Ahoy, mateys! Hey! Please, come aboard, come aboard!
Welcome to the Horror 101. This is episode 56. And this voyage is bound for The Fog. And I'm talking about John Carpenter's 1980 The Fog. Why are we doing this? Well, there's a few reasons. One, world-famous Brian Stewart and cult sensation Nick McPherson have never seen the fucking movie. Can you believe that? We've been doing this 5 years. They've never seen The Fog. We're remedying that here tonight. Also, Brian Stewart and myself and Nude were fortunate enough to catch John Carpenter's show at the Masonic Temple in Michigan. They screened Escape from New York for us. It was a wonderful time, hot as fuck. And then they came out, Carpenter and his son and their band, to play most of his themes for us. It was a 4-hour show. It was fucking phenomenal. It was hot. We were all sticky, icky, fucking just miserable. But you know what? It was worth it. Because it's John fucking Carpenter live.
John Carpenter live.
Yes. Is it the Carpenters?
Yes. No. No, not the Carpenters. No. We went to see John Carpenter at Masonic Temple, the Jack White Theater in Michigan. And it was hot as fuck. We had nosebleeds, balconies, but was it worth it? Come on.
It was worth it, but I have to say we suffered for our art.
I mean, this really. Place was built back in like 1915 when everybody was like 4'7" and 85 fucking pounds. I felt like a goddamn sardine in these seats.
I'll tell you something. If I wanted to rest my hands on my thighs, I was touching the seat in front of me. That's how close this. It was these curved seats in front of you that there was just no room. None.
A lot of horror shirts there. I saw Fulci shirts. I saw somebody wearing a Video Dead shirt. I've never seen that.
A lot of live, or They Live people. A lot of They Live.
A lot of They Live. Yeah. A lot of Halloween, obviously.
A lot of They Live swag. Swag counter, too.
Sunglasses. They were selling They Live sunglasses.
They had a shopping bucks. They had a shopping bag you could buy from They Live that just said consume.
Oh, I want that. I want it so bad.
It started at, 7:30?
Yeah.
And they ran Escape from New York. And it was so cool. I'd never
been to a theater like that where, you know, like every name that comes up, Kurt Russell, everybody's like, yeah!
It was great.
You know,
Henry Dean Stanton.
Yeah! Adrienne Barbeau. Yeah! And who was the...
Well, actually, when they did Harry Dean Stanton, somebody yelled out, Happy birthday, Harry!
That's right, because he had just turned 90.
He just turned 90.
Ooh. Yep.
Harry Dean Stanton.
So, yeah, and every time somebody made their first appearance on screen, there was another round of applause. Yeah.
All the hissing. Every time Snake Plissken was on screen, people hissed and went around the room.
Exactly. Imagine 300 people doing that every time, especially when he came out when he was wrestling and you could see the snake tattoo on his
abdomen. They cheered when they saw Donald Pleasance as the president.
Oh, yeah. Donald Pleasance, yeah. And not Dennis Weaver.
Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef.
The Van Cleef.
Yes, thank you. Lee Van Cleef.
I broke something.
You're going to kill me now, Snake?
I'm too tired. Maybe later.
The show started with Escape from New York, watched like we've never seen it before. Woo! Place is packed, hot as fuck. And then the movie's
Isaac
over.
Hayes, man.
Isaac Hayes, yep. And Susan Hubley, I forgot she was in that movie. So the movie's done, and I'm thinking, okay, well... Now Carpenter and it's Carpenter, his son, and their band.
Right.
Coming up. No, half an hour.
So it was the Carpenters.
In a way, I suppose it would be the Carpenters, right?
It was more than one.
So half an hour went by, and Nude, I'm looking at Nude next to me, and she's just fucking, she's melting. And I'm like, oh, fuck. How can anybody
she
have
got
a
smaller?
Like this? She did get smaller. And so half an hour later, John Carpenter, and they played for a full 2 hours. It was a 4 hour show.
Cheapest proof. Yeah.
And by the time we got out of there, everything was like, every piece of clothing was just like melded onto
us. I know, I took
us.
A shower as soon as I got
home. Sexy
like,
oh. Results.
It was ridiculous. But a fantastic show.
I picked up the album. I've been listening to it in the car all like last
Lost
few
Themes?
Weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this tour was because Lost Themes 2 came out in April.
Yeah.
Last year it was the first Lost Themes.
There's one track on the album that I swear to God, if any of our listeners have ever played the old Nintendo game Guardian Legend, I dare you to listen to track 4 and not think of Guardian Legend, because I swear they're just identical. And it's great. It's the synth, you know. It's kind of like it's that or like listening into the air tonight, you know. But yeah, there's something about it that it just works. There's, you know, nobody sounds quite like John Carpenter, but he's got a lot of pretenders.
You ever notice there's like this weird resurgence of 80s style synth music going on out there?
Yeah, especially with Stranger Things, which you've got to talk about. Now, keep in mind, before you go off...
Tell me that theme song doesn't sound like a John Carpenter theme.
It does, because it's melodic, right? Like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and with the other synth in there. But, yeah, Nick wanted to talk about Stranger Things. We're like, okay, let's give it to him. But keep in mind, I still have 3 episodes to go. I've seen 5 of the 8.
I've given up entire weekends for Netflix is releasing a series. Like, their original content is fucking ridiculous. Like... I have no idea how in the hell they can be so consistent.
Like House of Cards and other
House of Cards, like
Jessica
honestly,
Jones, Daredevil.
Jessica Jones, Daredevil. But I saw this trailer for this thing called, you know, Stranger Things. I'm like, well, what the hell is that? And I, as soon as I saw the logo, like the font for the thing, I'm just like, I just got like this nostalgic 80s vibes thing off. Before I even watched the trailer, I'm like, that's weird. That looks kind of... And then I watched the trailer and I was just like...
It's like the font off an Atari cartridge.
Pretty much.
It is.
Yeah.
It's not quite red. It's not quite orange. It's something in
between.
It's
like between. That weird Tron neon effect. Yeah.
Something in between.
So, like, I'm going to pop this on. And me, I'm just, like, watching this. Like I'm like a kid in an 80s video store, like, candy store. I'm just like...
The Demogorgon! We're deep shit.
Will, your action!
I don't know.
Fireball him!
I'd have to roll a 13 or higher.
Too risky. Cast a protection spell.
Don't be a pussy. Fireball him!
Cast protection.
The Demogorgon is tired of your silly human bickering.
Yeah, it's set in rural Indiana in the early 80s. And it's this town that just happens to be adjacent to this large, looming Department of Energy complex. And, you know, the... introduce these children, they're playing like this 10-hour campaign of D&D, and then they, you know, they're going home, I think it's a Sunday night, they're going home, and then the one child, Will, through mysterious circumstances, winds up vanishing, and basically that's what starts the story. It's basically, you know, his mother, the sheriff, you know, the townspeople basically trying to discover what happened to this child, with this looming kind of mysterious government conspiracy kind of sitting over top. And then this strange little girl shows up, and then things just really start getting weird.
Something seriously wrong with her. I bet she escaped from Pinhurst.
From where?
The nut house in Curly County. That would explain her shaved hair and why she's so crazy.
Why she went like...
She's an escapee is the point. She's probably a psycho.
Like Michael Myers.
Exactly! We should have never brought her here.
So you just wanted to leave her out in that storm?
Yes, we went out to find Will, not another problem.
Everything about it is just... It could have... Honestly, if it was 4x3 and slightly grainier, you would have thought it was shot in the 80s. Like, they put so much into this. And the fact that it draws, like, we could do a list, probably a page long, of all the shit. Like, there's essence of, there's a little bit of, like, Daryl in there. A
little bit of Stand By Me.
Stand By Me, Cloak and Dagger, like, all these.
Especially,
yeah, like, E.T. for sure, but.
Putting her in the dress and the wig, that's E.T. right there.
Oh my god. Yeah.
The girl having the nosebleed when she's using her powers is right out of Firestarter.
Firestarter, yep. It's like they took every single one of my favorite 80s movies, threw them in a fucking blender, and just poured me a big heaping cup of awesome.
I know it sounds crazy. I sound crazy. Yeah. You think I don't know that? It is crazy. Will is calling to me, and he's out there, and he's alone, and he's scared, and I don't care if anyone believes me. I am not going to stop looking for him until I find him and bring him home. I am going to bring him home.
And, like, I don't like Winona Ryder. Like,
teen girl. She's great.
You know, I liked her in Heathers. I liked her in Beetlejuice, you know, but then all of a sudden, she was the only thing I hated about Alien 4. I fucking couldn't stand her in Alien 4 at all. Not to say I like her again, but I'm enjoying her performance in Stranger Things, and I look forward to
seeing... I'll say it. I like her. I like her because of this. There we go.
I look forward to seeing the end of it.
If you were born anywhere near the fucking 80s, if you existed in the goddamn 80s, you need to watch this.
The music, as soon as I heard the music from the opening credit sequence, I'm like, ooh, what's this? Everything about this show, I just love it. I love to pieces. It's both nostalgic and creepy at the same time. It's all warm, fuzzy, and terrifying.
Honestly, because it's only 8 episodes, right?
10.
It's 10, yes.
No, 8, you're right.
No, it's only 8. Yeah.
It should have been 10.
We tore through, because I think we started watching it. I think it was Friday was when it released. We started watching it, say, 7, 8 o'clock. I don't think we went to bed that night until almost 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, because we rolled through the first 5 episodes in one shot.
Right.
And we were disappointed. Like, there was a part of us that was thinking, I'm going to make a pot of coffee, I'm going to get you some, you know, going to run to the store and get you an energy drink, and we're going to marathon through this fucker, because we didn't want to stop.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, because the fact that we had to be grown-ups and do shit the next day was pissing us off, because we're like, when are we going to watch the show? When are we going to watch the show?
You know Will? Do you know where he is?
Hiding.
From who?
Something that he shouldn't have.
/11:55, almost midnight. Enough time for one more story. One more story before 12. Just to keep us warm.
Hold the fucking phone. Hold the fucking phone.
The music was good. I like the music too.
We've been doing this show for how long, and you guys are just coming to me now that you've never seen John Carpenter's The Fog. You know what, Brian? Especially you. I mean, you love... A good ghost story with little gore, a fantastic story.
I don't mind gore, but I don't need it.
And this film is... I mean, it's got Janet Lee and... it's got Janet Jamie Lee Curtis in it. It's got both of them.
Wow.
And it's got Hal Holbrook, it's got Captain Mustache, Tom Atkins.
Thrill me.
It's Adrian Barbeau, and you'll see Charles Cyphers is in it, so like a lot of Carpenter favorites are in this film. And it's, like I said, it's a ghost story, it's a great story.
You know,
even not Robert's Blossom, Buck Flowers in it.
Buck Flowers!
There's a fog bank out there. Nick, you're 100% you have not seen The Fog.
Pretty positive. Well,
I'm going to make his head explode. After the end of the concert, I also came to the realization I'd never seen Christine either.
Okay, Christine.
That's a Stephen King story.
Yes.
You know what? The thing about The Fog is that it came between the titans of Halloween and The Thing. And because of that, I think it's overlooked. And it must be, to some degree, because you fuckers have never seen it.
Yeah, I keep forgetting it. I've heard of it, but I keep forgetting that it's a Carpenter movie. It's like, it's the middle child.
You have to like this movie. You have to like this movie.
Haha, challenge accepted.
You have to like this movie. I don't think it's going to hit you as much as, what was the other one where I, The Fly.
Oh, The Fly.
Remember I told you you'd love The Fly? But the elements of The Fog, particularly Brian, I mean, I know you'll like it too, but particularly Brian,
I like
ghost story,
ghost stories, yeah.
And the tale that's being told, you're given at the beginning of the film.
Yay, telling you the tale is important.
And it's around a campfire with John Houseman.
Yeah, John Houseman.
What a way to start the movie. And this, again, it's John Carpenter music, and Rob Bottin, who did the effects for The Thing,
right.
He actually has a part in this film.
Oh, cool.
He actually has a part in this film. So, without further ado, let's watch this movie. I can't wait to see what you guys think about it.
Let's shoot this fucker.
From the creator of Halloween, the ultimate experience in terror and suspense. John Carpenter's The Fog, starring Adrian Barbeau, Jamie Lee Curtis, John Houseman, Janet Leigh as Kathy Williams, and Hal Holbrook as Father Malone. The Fog. What you can't see won't hurt you. It will kill you.
Let's go to the beginning. John Houseman's story. Would you, you always love the telling of the tale.
That's my favorite part in a horror film. It's great.
100 years ago, on the 21st of April, out on the waters around Spivey Point, a small clipper ship drew toward land. Suddenly, out of the night, the fog rolled in. The ship crashed against the rocks. The hull sheared in two. The mast snapped like a twig. And the wreckage sank with all the men aboard. On the bottom of the sea lay the Elizabeth Dane with her crew, their lungs filled with salt water, their eyes open and staring into the darkness. And above, as suddenly as it had come, the fog lifted, receded back across the ocean, and never came again.
Congratulations to Antonio Bay for celebrating its centennial tomorrow. A centennial that was founded with betrayal and murder.
You know, this, while I was watching it, I couldn't help but think, but the small town of Antonio Bay was entering a very elite club of small towns that have all been under siege, like Bodega Bay or Amity or all these small little cozy towns where nothing happens for a long time and then all of a sudden they're under threat. I felt a strong Jaws presence in this, believe it or not, because in Jaws there was the threat of the shark. Never really explained how the shark just comes out of nowhere and how it is ends up in those waters, right? But there's an upcoming event. Town officials have been warned not to go through with a certain planned event, and they ignore the safer route, right? They
decided to proceed.
That's right. But, I mean, in this, you have the upcoming the centennial event for the town. And the priest has said, this is a cursed event, this is a cursed town. And they keep saying, are you going to be there? You know, and he's telling them, this is bad, this is a cursed town.
Our celebration tonight is a travesty. We're honoring murderers.
And it is always like, this, we should be doing this, there's nothing to celebrate. We should not be proud of what we're doing.
April 20, the six of us met tonight. From midnight until 1 o'clock, we planned the death of Blake and his comrades.
Yeah, the pioneers of the town were fucking murderers.
Yeah.
And thieves.
The entire town was built on gold,
stolen from this poor leper.
From this poor leper.
Well, the rich leper.
The rich leper. That's right.
April 21st, the deed is done. Blake followed our false fire on shore, and his ship broke apart on the rocks off Spivey Point. We were aided by an unearthly fog that rolled in as if heaven sent, although God had no part in our actions tonight.
Now, I mean, this is one thing I like in a good ghost story. You can't just have random hauntings or random deaths. There has to be a reason to the haunting element, and these ghosts definitely have an axe to grind.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Getting fucked over by people who want, you know, you're looking for like a place for you and your fellow lepers, and they fuck you over to take your gold.
Yeah,
and intentionally sink your ship.
Orchestrate your death.
Ahoy, mateys. This is KAB Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea. For the men of the seagrass, 15 miles out tonight, a warm hello. And keep a watch out for that fog bank heading in from the east.
Now, throughout the entire thing, we have the kind of narrator, the voice of the movie, is the town DJ, the late night DJ.
Adrian Barbeau.
Mm-hmm.
You would like to meet her.
She's crazy. There's no fog bank out there.
What do you know about her?
She owns that lighthouse.
I know that.
Her son plays Little League with my kid brother.
She's a mother?
I thought you were happily married.
Not that happy.
Fog bank out there. Hey. There's a fog bank out there.
There ain't no fog bank out there. Hey. There's a fog bank out there.
You don't need to oversell it. It works.
I like when they get on deck and they look up and there's that huge fucking mast going by.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck is that? You imagine how creepy that would be. I'm like, okay, that's like a 18th century schooner going by. It doesn't look good at all. Yeah. What the fuck is it doing here?
Hell.
And then all of a sudden you got people amidships.
Well, yeah, like,
holy
splash.
Fuck. Yeah. Like, are we being boarded right now?
Shit, we're being boarded.
Yeah.
For the cutlasses, man.
Let's go.
Hey, there was just a ship out there.
Red alert.
Just that initial setup, because you don't know at that point, you know, what it's going to be like. Is the fog going to roll in, or are they just going to miraculously be on the deck? But you actually get to see the boat, you know.
Damn cosplayers.
Yeah, I'm glad that they incorporated that, because that was the only time that you got the fact that the ghosts were traveling on the boat that went down. You know what I mean? Like, in the fog,
it's
on the water.
It's a maritime ghost story. You gotta have the ghost ship.
You gotta have
the
ship.
The only disappointing thing is that there was never any reference or shot of the ship after that. Like, you know, when she's looking down from the lighthouse and you see the fog rolling in towards the town, it'd be great if you could just see, like, the masts.
I would like one shot from her point of view at the lighthouse seeing that mast in the fog.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
That was a missed opportunity.
There's ghost stories, and then there's maritime ghost stories, and that's a whole other subsection and very rich lore there. And this, it's a very kind of cozy retelling of what I'm assuming is an old maritime ghost story. But and I like the atmosphere. I like the, like I said, the art direction. It is a great looking film. Beautiful.
Listen, I never hitchhiked before. I just really want to be careful. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Are you weird?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am weird.
You are weird.
Yes.
You're weird, thank God. You're weird. The last ride I had was so normal, it was disgusting. He picked me up in Santa Barbara. By the time we got to Carmel, he wanted to marry me.
Oh, yeah. I thought you never hitchhiked before. I got you.
And Captain Mustache, get this, without
no mustache.
When he came on screen and he had no mustache, he had no facial hair at all, you guys were like, oh!
Our disappointment was palpable.
We were cheated. I'm like, whoops, sorry, I forgot about that. And I had forgotten that John Carpenter himself had a cameo at the beginning of the film.
And he had a mustache.
You're my 13th
try. Oh, great. Weird and unlucky.
We'll see.
And this was Carpenter calling on both Lees, you know, not just Jamie Lee Curtis, because they had great success with Halloween, but also snagging Janet Leigh for the
bit movie. Of a missed opportunity that either, first of all, that Janet Leigh doesn't die, and two, to have both Lees in a movie, but they share no screen time or dialogue ever in this movie,
and
it's a bit of a waste.
Yeah, I mean, they're not together until the end of the film, and even then, they're just kind of like in opposite corners. They don't really.
Yeah.
But maybe there was a conscious decision to keep them separated.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe mother and daughter were fighting at the time. They're like, I don't want to act with her.
Harlot, crone. No, but yeah, it was definitely a missed opportunity to have one shared scene at least.
What the hell happened out there?
There was rust all over everything. It's like the boat had been out there a long time, taking on water. He was down below near the bunks.
Nick, his wounds are covered with algae. His lungs are full, and there's silt under his fingernails. I'll tell you, I saw Dick Baxter 3 days ago in Salinas. Now he's lying in there on the table looking like he's been underwater for a month.
One of the things I liked, too, was the mystery of the drowned man when the coroner's given his report, all the little things that don't add up. Kind of reminded me a bit of Chinatown, the Roman Polanski movie, when they found a dead body in a dry riverbed, and yet his lungs are full of water. Those little elements I kind of like, too. It's a tried-and-true kind of element of mystery that we've seen in other movies.
The whole body would take a year to decompose. Longer if it was down far enough and was cold enough.
But he was on the boat. He was below decks.
No. Dick Baxter died in the ocean.
And the coroner was the guy that played the convict that helped them fend off the invaders in Assault from Precinct 13. So I remember watching Assault from Precinct 13 a few weeks back, and I'm like, this guy's fucking cool. Why did he never come back? Why did John Carpenter, who's notorious for reusing actors and actresses, why did this guy never come back? And then, boom, I see him in The Fog. And you guys had never seen this film. I've seen this film a couple of times, but it's been a few years, and I was being surprised. I forgot that John Carpenter had a cameo at the beginning.
Right.
I had forgotten that that actor was actually in another Carpenter film.
Something the one lives with like an albatross around the neck, now more like a millstone, a plumbing stone, my God. Damn them all.
One of the things I really liked about this film was when the piece of the ship that had the last name of the ship, Dane, on it, she brought it to the lighthouse there, and the water started coming out of it. When the water reached the tape recorder that was playing, you could hear the specters talking. Something about an albatross, more like a millstone. You know, you can't quite make it out, but
it
just
sounds like the audio slows down. You just hear that, like that droning. Yeah,
you're like, what the fuck is that?
A little hint of Rime of the Ancient Mariner there when he talks about the albatross hung around his neck.
Yeah,
the Rime of the Ancient Mariner was a epic poem by Coleridge. Samuel Taylor Coleridge. This man gets married, and he's kind of wandered away from the festivities a bit, and he gets kind of dragged to one side by this old seafaring, this old mariner, who kind of, in the poem, he holds him fast with his gaze and wants to tell him the story, and he doesn't want to hear the story, but at the same time, he's compelled to listen. And he talks about this horrific tale of a ship lost at sea, and at one point, everything was going fine, except there was an albatross that was flying through the air, and somebody shot it. They thought, oh, look, and just for fun, used it for target practice and shot. And ever since then, the ship was just loaded down with bad luck, and people started dying. They get lost at sea. They run out of water. And that's where the famous line, water, water everywhere, but ne'er a drop to drink. Water, water everywhere, and all the boards to drink. That's where it comes from. So,
it's an albatross. It's good luck unless you kill it.
That's it.
I can see it.
Hey, now what is the big deal? You've seen fog once, you've seen it for life.
Oh, there's something different about this fog, Dan. It glows.
Someone's shining a light through the window.
Dan, listen to me.
Hold on, sweetheart. I want to check this out.
Dan! Dan, stay on the phone!
Keep your doors and fucking windows closed. Do not let the fog in.
If someone knocks at your door, don't answer. How many people die because they answered the door?
Yeah, well,
they're just being polite.
Go to your room. I want to see who it is.
No. Can't I stay for two more seconds?
I like that. Just as the kid's turning around, Mrs. Dinkelmeyer there is getting just run through. Seconds.
It's moving faster now. Up Regent Avenue, up to the end of Small House Road.
What's that?
It's just hitting the outskirts of town. Broad Street. Clay Street.
Kind of reminds me of Lynn Thigpen's role from The Warriors. Remember, she was the DJ in The Warriors, and she was telling everyone where to go and what to do. In this, she's actually directing the town. She's telling where the safe points are, where to be safe, and what to do. And somebody, please help my son at one point.
It's moving down 10th Street. Get inside and lock your doors. Close your windows. There's something in the fog. Richardsville Pike, up to Beacon Hill, is the only clear road. Up to the church. If you can get out of town, get to the old church.
You had mentioned during the film that, oh, this music's kind of muted. I'm thinking to myself, and I'm remembering when the fog's going inland, and it's bang, doom, doom, bang, doom, doom, doom. I'm like, you just wait for it.
It cut us off!
Where is it?
Right behind us in the driveway.
Inside.
The initial assault on the church at the end, when the fog starts to roll in on the church, that's when the musical cues were the strongest. And I like that shot of the assault, that huge, the fog rolling in there, the lighting. It was just really cool. That was the one part where I was like, okay, now we're in for it.
Six must die. That was on the
three men on the seagrass.
And the weatherman is four.
Miss Culbridge?
Yep, five.
And one of us?
That's
six.
That's what they want. They've come back for the six original conspirators.
Six on the line to take the place.
They want.
I like the story, you know, people were wronged, and a century later to the date, they're coming back to exact a ghostly revenge. This is what a ghost story should be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? On the 100th anniversary of this horrible act that these people perpetrated on us, we will rise from a watery grave and fuck you right up. That's exactly
what the fuck. Release six of you.
Blair, I have your gold.
The end of the film when the fog's along the floor of the church and you see the specters in the background and Blake's in the front drawing his sword with the glowing red eyes.
Yeah.
That kind of freaked me out when I was a kid. And then when he's holding on to the gold and he's right in the foreground, he's like right fucking there. He's touching him. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, this is about as close to hell as you'll ever get. And then whoosh, he was gone. And you know what? Fuck it. I'll go on record. I love the fucking ending to this film. I don't care if it's abrupt. I don't care if it seems like it's just shoehorned in. I fucking love it. The it cuts to black just as his blade meets his fucking neck.
Yeah.
And you hear it. Whoosh.
You know what? The carpenter understands that once the mystery is done and the mystery is solved, why linger? You know, why beleaguer the point? Why overstay your welcome? And he never seems to do that in any of his movies. It all just ends... after the thing is destroyed, at the end of the thing, it's just the two of them saying, well, now what do we do? And he goes, well, I really don't know. But he just leaves them there. And they go, why do you need to show anything else at that point? It's kind of, he may leave a few films hanging, but the runtime is always appropriate.
The Fog was made for $1 million. The original cut was only 80 minutes long, and when it was done being edited, both Carpenter and his producers agreed, this fucking sucks. It doesn't work. We gotta fix it. That's exactly what they did. They got the crew back together, did some reshoots, added more violence and a few more scares, tweaked the music, and finally came back with the 90-minute cut that we know and love today.
Score it, Nick!
I'll give it an 8. It's a solid watch.
Solid.
Yeah.
Will you watch it again?
Yes.
Yeah? You think in a couple years' time, it's like, you know what? I'm in for
it. I could see this being on... fuck one up, throw it on type movie.
Now, okay, it's between Halloween and The Thing. Where would you put it up against those two films?
Oh, it's of the three, it gets the bronze.
Yeah.
It's really getting late. There's not much we can do about any of this.
Brian Stewart?
Yeah, I think I'm going to match Nick. I think it's a solid 8. A few missed opportunities. No shared scene between Jamie Lee Curtis and her mother is a missed opportunity.
Or no shared dialogue.
Yeah. I wish we could have seen a little more of the ship. I mean, that would have been fairly expensive to do, though. I think that one shot was all they could afford, really. But apart from that, if I were to try and rate it compared to his other movies, it's not the worst Carpenter film. It's not my least favorite, but it's nowhere near the top either. I would say it's almost on par with They Live. They Live was probably more fun, but I didn't think they had a better story.
This town sits around for 100 years and nothing happens, and then one night the whole place falls apart.
You know what? I'll match your 8. I think we got 8s across the board. You know, it's not perfect. It's a great ghost story.
It's beautiful.
And it's a little bit slow, but I forgive it only because it starts off with the old man with his pocket watch sitting around a campfire telling a bunch of kids a ghost story. You know what I mean? And what a way to suck you in. To tell the not only just a ghost story, but the narrative to what is about to fucking happen to this town is his story.
But it is told by the fishermen and their fathers and grandfathers that when the fog returns to Antonio Bay, the men at the bottom of the sea, out in the water by Spivey Point, will rise up and search for the campfire that led them to their dark and icy death.
Well, folks, this is your stop. I hope you enjoyed your voyage to Antonio Bay to get a glimpse of The Fog, directed by John Carpenter, starring Hal Holbrook, Janet Leigh, Jamie Lee Curtis, Tom Atkins, Adrian Barbeau, and another Carpenter favorite, Nancy Loomis. Don't ask us about the 2005 remake, because we haven't seen it. The entire internet pretty much panned it as one of the worst remakes ever made, so we're pretty sure it's safe to skip it.
That's it for the show. We hope you enjoyed listening. For the world famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, this is Cash Wallbaum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. We're going to help you find it here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
I think it's best we call it a night here.